quite the day out there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even been out yet. You know, I haven't been able to get out there yet, so I'm hoping to have a little bit of space, a little bit busy today. When I mentioned before, retreat is busy. What I meant is, if you want to maximize the time, there's, you know, sessions, and I had disciplined time for the sessions, you know, in my own retreat, too. And it's okay, we're just talking informally. Yeah, no, you're perfect, no problem. So I have, it's very important to keep the discipline in a group or on your own retreat, and I found there just wasn't a lot of spare time. You know, there's something, you know, you're trying to do these sessions, but I did mention when you start on your own, if you try a weekend retreat on your own, or again, it's okay to keep the session short so the mind's fresh. And different retreats require different things. So it's good to get a little direct instruction before you yourself are going to do a retreat of, here's what I'm thinking to do, what do you suggest, you know. And everybody sets it up a little differently, and it's up to you how you want to set it up. So some people are very strict. You know, I'm not going to read, I'm just going to read this book, I'm studying. And I find it's helpful to be relaxed, you know, to see what is happening for the mind. So I often like to read during my break times. Sometimes I'll journal a little bit, write down some things that, but I'm pretty disciplined about the sessions and, you know, just to really work with what's showing up with my mind. So it's really your retreat, what you want to make it, what you'd like to create it as, because again, the point is, can I work with my mind of turning my mind from delusion? And so Westerners have an idea, they like it should be in silence, and I'm like, who made those rules? You know, if you're in a Shine retreat, sometimes people do, but I know someone, a Westerner, who got to a very high level of Shine. He went out for a walk every week with somebody, talk, you know, because he had a relaxed mind. So he could work with that. So you have to first figure out, how do you like to do it? And for me, I have a busy, active life. I was running centers. I'm teaching around the world, so I'm very busy external. So when I get to Laudo, if I choose to go there, then I'm really like, the doors close, and I need just a few months by myself to kind of recharge, you know, to renew again. So it really depends on what you're feeling. I think for some people, the first time you're alone with your mind in a stricter retreat, and it can be a bit intense, you know, it can be strong like that. So you try a little bit, you know, you have an afternoon, then maybe you're with a group for a week, then you try a weekend on your own, you build from there. You want to be reasonable. And then you have to see what fits in with your life. You have a family, you have work. You know, if you don't have a lot of money, you can't fly to Nepal and go to some remote hermitage. It's too expensive. So that's why it's great that Land of Joy is here. Right? It's perfect. That's fantastic. So now we're back. So again, it's nice to just check in for a moment. How's the mind? How's your motivation? Let's have a little look there. How was the discussion group? Discussion groups? Okay. Any questions from the discussion groups? Any confusion? Sorted some things out?
Scratched the surface.
Scratching the surface?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing most of the time, right? It's good. No, it's good. Let me talk a little bit. This session goes until 5. We'll have a short break and there'll be some meditation before dinner. I want to talk the obstacles to Shine is where we left off. I've got a couple books I like here. There are books specifically on Shine. One that comes to mind is calming the mind. Calming the mind. Genlam Rinpa was a great master. He was an amazing being. He was kind of like, I don't know, for me, like the hippie yogi. He was a Tibetan Lama, great Lama. His Holiness gave him the name Genlam Rinpa because it means he realized the Lam Rim. And he lived above Dharamsala near Tushita, our center there, where the meditators lived. There's a couple different areas where they live. And those meditators, usually Tibetan monks for the most part, just as a gauge of how different ways to do retreat. So at Tushita, occasionally, I will go to the village, the market, and buy some fruit and things. And then at lunchtime, I'll walk over to the meditators area. It's just maybe a 20-minute walk. And I like to go there. There's a giant stupa for His Holiness Trijon Rinpoche. He was the junior tutor to the Dalai Lama in his last life. And he's reincarnated. He lives in Vermont now in the United States. So I would walk over, and what happens with these meditators, the huts are kind of old stone kind of hovels, and they're near each other, and they ask, you know, there's a sign about, you know, to be quiet when you go through there, and the stupa's there, and you can walk around. And so they'll come out usually after lunch, and they're washing clothes, or they're doing something. And this is lifelong retreat, people in lifelong retreat. But I don't want to disturb them. Some are quite relaxed. So what I'll do is I'll see, and they'll look over, and I'll hold up an apple, and then they're like, because I want to make an offering. And then they're like, yeah. And sometimes they'll talk to you a little bit if you know a few words of Tibetan. And so this is how you create the yogi, yogini mind. Any of us can do. So you have a little experience, and then you go back into your daily life, and you want to bring that mind. It doesn't have to be so separated from the meditator's mind. Okay. However, you're not in formal meditation when you're working. That's okay. But I can still be more mindful and be conscious of my mind. Okay. So it's nice. Then I go over and make an offering to them, and then I feel like I get a little hit of their meditation energy, you know. But it's very nice. And they're always happy, you know, to get some offering where they live up the mountain. They don't go down to town. They eat very simply like that. So the Genlam Rinpa lived up there, and then he traveled the West, and he led, I think, a kind of famous Shinne retreat maybe in the early 90s or in Washington State and in the States. And then we hosted him once in San Francisco. And it was wonderful to spend a couple days with him. And when you work at a center and a great teacher comes and there's very few staff, you're the one driving them around. You know, you can take them to the doctor, you can show them. And we went to a very high mountain in San Francisco, just above the center. And I remember he looked out and he said, you know, I think I'll do a retreat over there, get a little cabin, you know, on one of the hills. It was really, very cute. He also said there was too much microwave activity, like to really, and that's the way the world is now. You know, there's all the cell phone towers and things beeping off of this, and so this place is kind of special because you don't have that kind of disturbance as much. So it's quite nice. So he has the book Calming the Mind. There's many books about Shinne specifically, and the Lam Rim books will have a passage about concentration and calm abiding like that to develop meditative absorption. And they'll talk about vipassana, insight, and the right view and things like that. So there's a couple books I found here that I like. Illuminating the Path to Enlightenment, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. This was published by a group that's in Los Angeles that had a great Lama. And the famous early Lam Rim book, The Essence of Nectar. Essence of Nectar. If you're not familiar with the Lam Rim, start with this. Very easy rollout. And it's also in another version called The Essence of Nectar. The Essential Nectar. They're the same book, just different title. This is one of our beginning books that we started with. Excuse me. So I mentioned the right conditions that you need. Let me just talk a little bit to think about in my own life every day to try to just, not talking just about Shinne, but I want to try to get my practice going. Some of you mentioned I want to kickstart the practice. I need to do something. Just think about these for a moment. But this is also, if you ever think later, I'd like to try to do some shine in a retreat setting. Okay? Again, I mentioned the sound basis you need of an ethically disciplined way of life. Good ethics. Again, so the mind's not all over the place. How am I dealing with the 10 non-virtues like that? You need few personal needs or being involved in too many mundane activities. How's that going for you? Right? You think of, so it's something now. Don't worry now and go, oh, I'm not like that, or I'm raising a child. Or it's just something to start thinking about, simplifying. So it doesn't. There's nothing black or white that if you didn't do this by today, this is a process. So you want to slowly start looking at your life. I know people now, serious Dharma practitioners, I'm selling the house, I'm downsizing. Kids are gone, and I can get rid of, or I'm just cleaning out that room because I'm going to set up a meditation room. Cleaning out the closet. Getting rid of, you know, there's a level of cleanliness to the mind when your space is clear. So you check if that's important to you and you feel... I know for some people I don't know if you have this word, hoarders, people that hoard. Some people say they're collectors. And there's collectors I know that are hoarders. They're in denial that they're hoarders, okay? One is very dear to my heart, okay? It's sometimes you don't know where to begin. It's so overwhelming with your stuff. And we have a lot of stuff, you know. I think in England you have less stuff than we have in the States. People in the States, they have so much stuff, they spend a lot of money every month to store their stuff. Okay? And somebody I know, it really has affected their marriage. Their whole, it's this stuff about all their stuff, and it's spilling down the stairways, and it's very challenging for the mind. So check if that's something that I can start simplifying. You can also simplify friends. Every time they buy a new shirt in a store, another shirt goes to charity. They don't keep accumulating. It's like, this was really nice, I enjoyed wearing you, thanks so much. Out you go, okay? Another condition, a good understanding of all the key elements and stages of the practice. So this is you yourself building a good foundation of the philosophy. A good understanding of the philosophy, because if I want to meditate, I need to know what I'm going to meditate on. Okay, so one of the things I did early on is I did a retreat at Laudo, and I had a little tiny course on the Lam Rim, but I got the next Lam Rim book I would recommend after this. Am I repeating for people? Are you well beyond the Lam Rim? You're okay, okay. Is a book called The Essence of Refined Gold. The Essence of Refined Gold. So it's a little bit longer Lam Rim book, but it's still very easy to understand. I took that on retreat with me. And this is the old days before devices, tablets, and whatever. But it was I wrote out an outline myself. I just wanted to go through each section and say, what's the essential part? Okay? If I say to you, we did this morning untraditionally, precious human rebirth. We have a precious human rebirth. It's the beginning of the Lam Rim. So I looked at that chapter, I read the whole chapter, and I went back. And I said, okay, well, there's 18 situations that make up a precious human rebirth, traditionally. 18 situations. Okay. There's 8 freedoms, 8 situations you're free from, and there's 10 endowments or richnesses. 5 of them personal, 5 environmental. So I learned those, but I made a list of those, just those. I didn't have to read the chapter again. You're free from being in an animal rebirth, okay? Free from being in a god realm. You're free from being in another lower realm, okay? You're free from having defective sense faculties. I kind of made, you know, and so then what you do is when I wanted to meditate, I had the 18 situations, okay? And I did 4 sessions a day, let's say, in the retreat. So over 4 to 5 days, I went through each session, I took a different freedom or endowment. Okay, or you just stay with one. So free from being an animal. What does that mean? How does that work? Okay, And I would think of my dogs and a cat we had, and I thought, well, they didn't have such a bad life. Isn't that how you think about your pets? Right? I go to work, my pet sleeps all day, what's the problem? Okay, so our domestic animals, and this is what I look at in the meditation, our domestic animals are the peak of the animal realm, very top of a massive pyramid. Okay, most animals live in the sea. Okay? If you really, and you have to check in the meditation, what's it like to be in the animal realm? So pick an animal. You can pick your dog if you want. But you could pick a wild animal. Their entire existence is consumed with eating. Okay, so they're either vegetarian or they're killing other animals to eat. So they're hunting. That can take days to get your prey, to finally get an animal, to catch an animal, right? You're hunting, you're killing, you're eating, okay? You're sleeping, you're going to the bathroom, and you're making more animals. That's the animal realm. So please check. That's basically what they're doing. They don't have time to practice Dharma. They don't have any understanding of Dharma, because I don't see any animals in this room, okay? And we had animals at centers. They didn't understand, you know? Things like that. One time we had the center I ran in California was in the redwood forest. And there were many raccoons at the time, the animal with the mask. Familiar? It's like a badger, but with a mask, right? Very naughty animals. They're in the bear family. So they would come in and they would destroy the altar and looking for food. So we were doing what's called a self-initiation tantric practice. And there was a part of it where you have a symbolic eye band, a red band around your face, like a blindfold, we'd say. Blindfold. We were doing it with Rinpoche. There were about 30 of us in the room. Middle of the night, right, dark outside. There was a side door to the gompa. It was a big gompa. We're all sitting there. And 3 in the morning, suddenly, and it was hot, so the doors were open a little bit. One door swings open. Like this. Everybody turns. We're face this way. Everybody turns. We look this way, and in comes a raccoon, you know, comes in with its eye band on. It was the funniest thing. And it looked in, and it was the funniest. It was very casual. Looked in the room and went like this. Very just checked out, you know, and then just very slowly, no fear, just turned around and walked out. It was a little bit like, oh, wrong party. Sorry. It was really, you know, and we howled. Rinpoche laughed so hard. We were all like, there we were, you know. It was the thought like, no food, not that interesting. Exit stage left. It was the funniest thing. So animal realm. So you spend however long you do in a session, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, however long you want to soak your mind, okay, because I'm clear maybe it's not so good to be an animal here, but I don't have it here. So I would spend a little bit looking out the eyes of that animal. How does a raccoon walk around? What do they eat? What do they understand? What's their day like? What's their night like? What are they afraid of? What are they, you know, I had studied these animals because they lived around me at the center, so I could see the fights they had and all the babies they had and the territory and the this and, all, you know, on and on. You see kind of, you just choose an animal. We're afraid of snakes, people say. What's it like to be a snake? No arms and legs. You're on the ground. Some human comes, walks over, you feel the vibration. You're terrified. I see people terrified of a mouse, a spider. I'm like, the thing is this big. Look at you. Right? Like, it's so interesting that why? What do we get? What are we afraid of? So you analyze slowly over and over and over till here you get a feeling of like, I don't want to be an animal. Like, I'm free of that. I'm free of that. Then you apply the concentration to that experience. Deepen the experience. It fades again. You go back. Analyze again. Slowly you try. Like that. So that's a way you break down the lamrim to do. So slowly you have to make, so you want to take the time to study, understand the trajectory of what am I meditating on. And you get familiar with the lamrim from simple books. More advanced, you go to some lamrim teachings. What happens with Westerners, it's our philosophy. Lam is path. Rim, stages. Stages of the path, okay? So that stages means it's a gradual process to change your mind. Please be patient with yourself. Please be patient, okay? And what would happen is you're in retreat with the Lam Rim, and I notice this at centers. So now the centers have gotten smart, and they won't say Lam Rim teaching necessarily. I think they had a retreat here 2 weeks with Venerable Mary, and it said Lam Rim, something like that. Okay, great. But often now the centers call it something else, because people go, oh, Lam Rim, I've had that, yeah. Done that. Like, people get bored. They don't have any realizations of the Lam Rim, of the philosophy. So that's a way, we call it analytical meditation. And you take each topic, break it down, what's the essence of that topic to meditate on. So then I don't go back through the paragraph, I just go to the points. So I made my own outline initially. Now there's many outlines, many things online. And our Discovering Buddhism courses take you right through the Lam Rim, the different topics. Really helpful.
So the benefit from thinking about being glad that you're not an animal, is that to appreciate the state that you're currently in? Then?
Yes, absolutely. Right. To appreciate human rebirth. Because then the point is that that I'll use this life wisely.
Okay.
You know, because this situation is pretty rare, and it's going to be gone soon, like that. So when you get that moment of like, this is great, I need to use them, it's to liven that up for the most part. And then the other thing about, I mentioned precious human rebirth is one of the best antidotes to anxiety and depression. A lot of people ask me about that, and I'm like, you need to meditate on precious human rebirth. You need to start finding the value in your good qualities in a balanced way. Because a negative part of the ego as well is to say you're lower than everyone and to have low self-esteem. It's just like saying you're great, that you think you're the best thing on the planet. It's the same device of the ego. You're either too low or you're too high. Better to have a balance. You know, to feel good about my path, I'm trying, I make mistakes, but I'm okay. You understand? If that's so, it does counter the... I just lost my place. Let me go back to concentration. Oh, here we go. Okay. So a good understanding of the key elements. Okay. Another thing for retreat in general in your life, an appropriate diet and avoidance of excessive eating. Right? Okay. Again, don't make a trip on yourself. Relax. Please relax about it. But just look at a conducive diet. You know what is good for your body to eat. Each of us is different. We live in different parts of the world. We have different things we eat. And I'm sorry to say it, as you get older, it changes what you can eat. I used to be able to eat anything. I can't really digest things, some things anymore. Difficult, okay? So an appropriate diet, what's appropriate for you? Again, please be relaxed with this. On retreat, I don't go into retreat. People came to our centers, our rented cabins. Somehow that's when they decide to do their fast and their cleanse. We're not a health center. So they come in, one woman, I mean, it's the same distraction. Woman showed up 3 weeks coming. So the group was there, the cook was there, you could send a note down just asking maybe for something. The next time you go in town, is it possible to get me any dried apricots? Okay, that's reasonable. She had a whole list of vitamins she wanted with the brands of the vitamin. If you can't get the... So he tried. He bought some things, right? She gave the money. He bought some things. And then it was another note. This isn't what I asked for. I told you to get the 64 capsule ones. I told you. So it's just busy mind avoiding retreat. There's people who get in retreat. They start sending massive missives, letters down to the cook and to the manager. Because they can't... Again, be still, be quiet and still. You're drunk and this is the edge of the roof. Can we just quiet down for a moment? It's terrifying the first time you quiet down to look at your mind, and then you get used to it. And this is all you've got is your mind. So when you're dying, right, so you can be peaceful with it, because you've already explored and had a look, and you go, yeah, that's me. Okay, I'm okay. Did my best. Gave it my, you know. So slowly. So a diet. However, so I was on a retreat. Maybe the longest retreat was I think about 7 months. Not at Laudo, that retreat. So I was usually at Laudo to do like 3, 4, 5 month retreats. I finished the center in California and they offered me a 7 months retreat there in this wonderful cabin. It was just fantastic. It was the only time on retreat I had organic blueberries. I never had food like that on retreat because I was at Laudo. So within reason, you know, we worked out. I cooked for myself, the list for the cook, on and on. And I got the cabin outfitted with a bunch of dried goods or things I thought I might want over 7 months, so it wasn't a problem for the cook. And then I had some, I think, instant coffee, but I wasn't a coffee drinker at the time. But I'm going along for a few months, and I wasn't eating afternoon, but I just felt in the afternoon, I was like, you know, after a while with retreat, sometimes you end up, you're tired or it's not going, you know, you can't, you need to push. So I just kind of got tired of all the teas. I got tired of all the juices. You get bored. The Western mind likes variety in eating, right? Some of the Asian minds I meet, they could eat the same thing every day. Some of my Asian sisters and brothers, right? So somehow all of a sudden I saw the instant coffee. I said, pulled the coffee down, had, you know, a little instant coffee. It's not good coffee, but I had the coffee, a little bit of milk in it, right? It was just what I needed. It was the perfect thing. Right. So you can make rules, like no sugar, no... I find sometimes you need food for happiness. So can you balance? Can you balance it? I like pizza and ice cream. I can't digest them very well. But I really like them. So maybe once a month, I'm with a friend, we get an ice cream. You know? It's a problem. I don't eat too much of it. I probably get but I like it, and it brings me joy. And I eat it, and that's all. And it's got done, and it's over. So again, within balance, just find a way, because over time, I guess somehow for me, I got in touch with foods that continued to make me sick. Why are you going to reach for them again? Why do you keep going to it when you know? So if you really want that food and you have a craving, can you just have a little bit of it? A little bit of it. This is, again, about controlling the mind. So you just try your best. Just try your best. So if you're eating chocolate, I know there's some chocoholics in here. I hope. Some people? Yeah. She's like, oh yeah, that's me. Okay. It's good to know who you are, right? It's good to know you're... people have these hard and fast rules, and if somebody offers you chocolate, and you like it, and you want it, right? How do you eat chocolate? I'm just curious. What's your experience? Let's explore. Yeah. Just shove it in there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people, it's like my mother was a chocoholic. Terrible addiction to chocolate. Okay? And the horrible tragedy in the end of her life was it didn't agree with her stomach. And it was like a tragedy. You know, it's like, oh, it's her favorite food. But I would see when I bring a box of chocolates in, I could already see her shaking. Like all she imputed on it. Okay, so Lama Zopa Rinpoche, let's be realistic. Lama Yeshe used to say, are you touching reality? You're touching reality. And that means Lama Zopa Rinpoche would say, then understand the pleasure of the chocolate, if you like it, the pleasure of the chocolate is from here to here. That's it. Why do we make more of a story about it? Right? And then the other thing is I notice people eat chocolate, this is very sad to me, with guilt. Right? I see people, oh, I shouldn't. You're not allowed to have the piece if you should me. I don't want that. You eat it and enjoy it. It's delicious. Why shouldn't you? Why shouldn't you? I mean, I'm not asking you to eat the whole box. That's a little bit excessive. Why not have a piece and enjoy it? Okay? I think it's very healthy. So again, that balance in the mind. I'm not imputing this is the source of my ultimate happiness. But we can enjoy things like that. A last thing I want to mention, as few distractions as possible. As few distractions as possible. If you're in Shina or a longer retreat, with restriction of interactions with strangers or other people, that's your choice. I have been in retreat at Laudo and said, these are the three people I will speak to during this retreat. So if somebody else turns up, whatever, no, not until I'm done the retreat. But I do have people in case of an emergency that I can go to for a doctor, or if I need to get information, or my family sends a message, there's some people I'm comfortable that can support me to speak to me. But as far as your own life, what are your distractions like right now? What are your distractions like? So for you just to get real of reprioritizing your life, if you want the practice to open up, it's totally possible to look at what distracts me more. When I came back, after I met the Dharma in the late 80s, I was a real party girl before that. And then I was living in San Francisco, and I had a lot of friends. And there was a whole party scene, bars and dances and things like that. And I would go to them, but as I got more into the Dharma, I didn't find as much fun in that. And I started to make other friends. So the friends at the parties were like, well, you don't like us anymore. How come you don't come out with us anymore? You know, how come you never come to the bar? Things like this. So what I felt was those kind of distractions didn't benefit me anymore. I fortunately wasn't enjoying. So you have a choice of either turning it where I got them to come to a yoga class with me, and it was this class, or do you want to go for a walk in the park? And I felt like there was a little bit more heart connection than just drinking all night with them, something like that. So it's your choice of what kind of distractions. That was one experience for me, but you also have other distractions of maybe too much time answering email, too much time on the internet, surfing the internet, watching movies, whatever your thing is. Some people too much physical recreation, they go to the gym all the time, they're just... So again, you have to sort it in your own life, is what's keeping me from... another thing that can keep you from your practice is workaholism, busyness. Okay, that was one of my excuses. And a woman that also worked at our center was always doing for others. You know, people say, oh, she's a real bodhisattva, and she's always out there for others. And one day we were sitting in the car, I was bringing her home, and she said, well, actually, it's just a way for me to avoid looking at my mind. And she was very honest with herself. So that can be another excuse, that I'm just too busy, too busy. You know, I've heard people say, I'm at this retreat, I want to go, but I'm too busy. I'm, you know, it'll always be an excuse like that. So sometimes you just have to make the time. So another thing they talk about is the three higher trainings is what developing wisdom rests on: ethical conduct, concentration, wisdom. Ethical conduct, concentration. You need the ethical conduct to develop the insight, meditative stabilization. I already explained that. I need the shine, the meditative stabilization, to penetrate emptiness, see emptiness directly. That's how those three fit together. So some nice things you can check on about that. And then antidotes and common impediments, obstacles. I mentioned this a little bit to Shine. Okay. Five obstacles in Shine. And I mentioned a little bit of how the mind, what you're checking with the mind, when it gets lazy, when it gets, mostly when it gets excited, when it gets tired. But laziness is one, okay? A lack of enthusiasm. So, for instance, I know many people, we talk about our practices. Yeah, I want to do some shine. A little bit of laziness. You never get it going. So that's one obstacle. We all have that going at times with our practice. Number two, forgetting the object. So I'm in the session. I have focus on my object. Mind goes off. That's a standard object, a standard obstacle that we're familiar with. You did some shine this morning. The reason I'm waiting is for us to digest our food. It's hard in the afternoon. The mind goes off the object, and I'm out there wandering, created a whole drama, and then, whoop, back to the object. Okay, back to the object. That takes vigilance. Okay. Dullness and agitation I mentioned. Dullness is laxity, lethargy. There's a gross and subtle level I mentioned. Excitement, also called agitation, gross and subtle. I'm either grossly following an object of desire, distracted that way, or I'm subtly on the object, holding the object, and there's still subtle agitation in my mind. Okay. Not applying antidotes, okay, and over-applying antidotes when you don't need. Those are considered the five obstacles to developing shine. Antidotes for laziness. Okay, they say there's 8 applications of antidotes. With laziness, we have different types of faith. Okay, so for instance, I don't really want to meditate. I'm not that inspired to start a practice. I want to do it, but, you know, I don't really have the time. So what if you develop some faith in the teachings? This is what will get you free. This is what will wake you up. This is what will make your mind at ease. This ultimately will counter any anxiety you have, depression, jealousy, pride, all the other delusions. You want to counter desire. This is the path. This is what we do. So some faith. And so they talk about different kinds of faith that you... Faith that is inspired when you see the results with other practitioners of how they've worked with their mind. So it inspires you. Okay. You know, a faith of like making the effort, motivated by an aspiration. I want to do that one day. I see these yogis, I'd like to be like that one day. So a faith that says I will make effort in doing that. Like that. So it's interesting to explore faith. We, as Western culture, often has issues with faith different than my Asian sisters and brothers who seem to have a lot of faith from their culture somehow. Like that. So we each have things to learn from each other, I've found, so much. I've learned so much from them, and they said they've learned from Westerners when you have a teacher at the center, especially a highly realized teacher, like Rinpoche or someone, Asian cultures don't give much space to the teacher. They're always at the door, clamoring. They always, you know, people fight in the kitchen. I want to cook for them. I'm going to cook. And the way they said they learned, some of my friends said they learned from Westerners to give space, because we like more space. I learned from them devotion and faith, how incredibly devoted they are. We don't have the built-in faith that they have. The way to develop faith is from applying some of the teachings, getting guidance from a highly realized being, applying the advice, if I checked and asked for advice, right? Putting the teachings into practice, and I've always noticed changes in my mind for the better. And then I think, okay, well, that worked. That last advice Rinpoche gave me, that, I like the result of that. So I think I'll check now another piece of advice. Deepens your faith, or deepens your faith in the practice. An antidote for forgetting the object that you're meditating on, they call it recollection. Recollection. So you're in meditation. Back to the object. I lost the object. Back to the object. I'm recalling. I'm recalling the object. Okay. So the antidote for dullness and agitation. Okay. Sometimes they call it alertness. I call it vigilance. Vigilance. Okay. So, and there's different ones you would use. For instance, if you are meditating and you're sleepy and you keep dozing off, that's gross laxity, you're dozing off, okay? Any kind of meditation, right? You might need to just stand up in place. It's easier when you're on your own. In a group retreat, you try to keep some discipline, not to disturb people. Get up, or at the break, and it's a hot day today, I might not have a hot drink, I might have a cool drink. I might splash cold water on my face. If you're in a session and you don't want to move and disturb anybody, I might visualize a bright light at the top of my head drawing the energy up. Okay? You can reflect on precious human rebirth. It brings the energy up, inspires, lightens the mind up. Just standard practical things. Okay? If I find my mind's extremely excited and it's bouncing around the room, and it's running after all these ideas and thoughts and chasing pizza and things like that, okay? Meditate on death and impermanence. Sobers the mind. I could die, and this is what I'm thinking about, pizza? Right? So it just brings the mind down a little bit. Consider. Like that's something to quiet the mind. This, again, I have a reflection, this could be my last day today, so I, you know, instead of thinking about pizza, I'm going to do, let me do some practice. I try to. An antidote for applying remedies when you don't need to apply them is equanimity. Suddenly I'm in meditation, and I'm checking and I'm vigilant and I'm calling my object up and I'm thinking there's something and all of a sudden it's just relax. Equanimity, it's just equal space. Everything's okay. Just relax. So those are some of the, and then there's more, you can talk about the, you know, the nine stages, but the stages of Shine, they're somewhat understandable, where your first stage, just like we did this morning, you put your mind on an object, okay, and you're off the object, you're barely on the object, so you're just bringing it back. Second level, you're a little bit longer on the object. Third level, a little bit longer. The fourth level, bless you. The fourth level, you're on the object, there's a gap, I'm off, I'm back on, there's a gap, you start patching the gaps. I start noting the gaps and being able to keep the concentration going. Then each level, more and more concentration, like that. Okay, we have a little energy for some Shine. Okay, we try a little bit. Just try your best. Does anybody need to stretch before we start? Feel free if you want to stand up. Once again, allow your body to find that comfortable posture. You can close your eyes. Allow the mind to settle in the breath for a moment. And take a moment to find an object on which to meditate, to focus your concentration, a visual object. So if you'd like to change your object from this morning, feel free. If you're not sure about an object, you can place a little radiant golden drop of light outside your nostrils. If you'd like to focus on that as an object. And if you get very distracted, you can always go back to the breath. With the radiant drop of light, if you find you're about to lose the object, you can brighten the intensity of the drop of light. Sometimes it helps your mind hold it more easily. So get clear on your object. We'll do 3 5-minute segments. And just think for the next 5 minutes, I'll keep my mind on this object without my mind wandering. And begin. Please relax. Just take your mind off the object for a moment. You can open your eyes. Try again. So if some of you want to go 10 minutes, we'll just go 10 minutes. And if you want to break the session yourself and open your eyes and just sit for a moment and start again, break it into your own segments. Just estimate the time. At the end of 10 minutes, I'll ring this gong. That. Because it's helpful for you to figure out when I go home, how will I do this? Can I keep this going? So you get some experience. That. So you can make a 5-minute segment, you can try 10 minutes if you've got some concentration. You can get your own, make your own determination and try your best. How's your shine?
I have a question.
Yes.
I have been doing visualization for a while, but I always get the same format. I visualize a candle or an apple or a pear, that sort of thing. They start off fine, but they're always black and white, they're always in a fog, and then they become an outline the longer I meditate on them, just an outline of a candle or an outline of an apple. When you first started, did you have that problem? Or?
Everybody's a little bit different, and some people have a very difficult time visualizing anything at all. So I had a very easy time visualizing, so everything was in living color for me, quite clear. Not that I had great concentration, but it's common for us to have difficulty visualizing, and we just keep working on it. Purification practices, they say, can help. Vajrasattva, some people can't visualize anything. It's very difficult for them. So I think just keep going, because you get it in the beginning. You know, you might want to make the apple in color, in red, without the fog. Yeah, if you can.
I did into. We had a very bullying boss one time, and I used to visualize her face, and happily she became an outline.
Right. So it also depends if you... So you're saying it just turns into an outline, it's not something you're creating.
No, it's... I mean, I can still see the outline of the apple or the outline of the candle.
That's good, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Like that. So I would keep it there. Sometimes distraction has it turning into an outline, or the object's moving around. People say they have Buddhas and the Buddhas. That's distraction again. So it's more like... So I'm just talking about an object now, a visual object. It's stationary, not moving, not turning, not an outline. And so slowly just see if you can add some color into it, I would say. You could also try a different object. Change your object and see if that might help. Yeah.
How do you time meditation at home?
Mm-hmm. And also, one thing I wanted to say with Shini, when I mentioned the determination... Don't get too obsessive about it. It's more just you want to define for your mind. I'm doing a session now. Like I'm you know, just gives you a little anchor out of the gate like that. So you can say determination, but sometimes you're already in the mode and you feel like this is, I know what I'm doing. You just get clear on the object and go. It's already happening. Regarding timing, it's really up to you just to estimate, I would say. If you want, I do know people that were doing emptiness meditation regularly. So they set a little alarm, 25 minutes. The alarm would go off. They'd stand up for 5 minutes, stretch, and another 25 minutes like that. So it's really up to you. If you have, you know, if you do have the phone in the room just for that, okay, but be very careful about that. If it goes off, it starts vibrating. You know, or have a different alarm that you set, that you use just for meditation, so that the phone isn't distracting you. You could do like that. You know, and sometimes after a while you estimate, like some people I know that can just get to 20 minutes in the morning, they have a rough idea, 20 minutes, and they're usually bang on. You know, they're really like, okay, well, that was 20 minutes or whatever I was doing. Or they have a clock, and if they're not like having the eyes fully closed, they might just reference the clock of where am I in the meditation if you're doing more analytical. So different ways you can do. So sometimes it's also good in your practice. Let's say we're doing a session now, which we're doing. We tried a little meditation, shine, and you might say, okay, I'm gonna stand up and you know, I'm still in my session, but I'm just gonna, you know. So I'll sit down, and if it's not going well, where I'm very distracted in a session, I've just eaten. Usually after lunch, I said I give myself some space before I formally would sit again. Sometimes it's nice to take out a prayer, okay? So this prayer book has many, many things in it. Just if you can turn to page 120 for a moment. This has happened to me many times on retreat. the mind's not cooperative, and then I'm like, I'm just going to read some prayers right now, and then feel, and then suddenly I read some prayers, it inspires me, I'm ready to meditate again. Prayer of St. Francis. This is nice sometimes in the afternoon, it kind of inspire, re-inspires us. Page 120. And so really think about the words that anytime you're reading prayers. Lord Buddha, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, unity. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is error, truth. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is sadness, joy. Where there is darkness, light. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled, happiness for the ego, as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love, for it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, it is in dying, having practiced, that we are born to eternal life, from happiness to happiness, up to full enlightenment. May all beings effortlessly attain the transcendent, blissful state of omniscient Buddhahood. So it's nice over time, FPMT made this prayer book, these two prayer books, and there was a massive amount of discussion about it, and a lot of us had input into how we wanted the prayers, and you know, and they spent all this time, and it's nice, eventually you explore them, and then you're like, oh, I really like this prayer, this really speaks to me, and there was a, basically a Lam Rim prayer that this book is based on, called Lines of Experience, and it's one of my favorite Lam Rim prayers. And I just found that I would read it every night. And part of it, of that translation, it has each verse of the Lam Rim from Lama Tsongkhapa, who wrote it. And then at the end of each verse, he would say, I, a liberation seeker, practiced in that way. Or it said something like, I, a yogi, practiced in that way. You, a liberation seeker, should do likewise. So every verse would kind of give you more of the Lam Rim, and then it would say that, I, a yogi, practice like this, you, O liberation seeker, would do likewise. And it really impressed me, the prayer, and I went through the Lam Rim and that, and you can stop at a stanza and meditate on that particular part of the Lam Rim once you're familiar with, and then you can go on and read the rest of it. So every day my mind kind of got soaked in the whole path, the whole philosophy, but I was focusing a little bit more on certain topics like that. So sometimes find a prayer you like, you can read it now and then. Very helpful. Okay, so let me go in a little bit more about self-compassion, renunciation, like that. The renunciation, what do you think of when I say renunciation? What comes to mind? Renunciation, to renounce something.
Reject.
Mm-hmm. What other things come to mind?
Give up.
Mm-hmm. What are you rejecting or giving up? What would you like to reject or give up?
Distraction.
Mm-hmm. Distraction. What other things would you like to give up?
Anger.
Attachment.
Ignorance, jealousy, pride, fear, loathing, depression, anxiety. Yeah. Distraction, delusions, all these things. Absolutely. Okay. So thank you for saying this. What often comes up with renunciation in general, people have this idea if you're renounced. If you're a renounced person, what do you think of renounced people? What are they like? I don't know if you've met many renounced people or...
Content,
right? They're content, right? So they're following some of these things. They're living simply. They're happy with what they have. They've already checked into the mind of distraction. They kind of see, well, you know, And you might say, well, they're yogis, and there's a monk I know, and he really lives a very renounced life, renounced from physical things, lives very simply. So sometimes you see that and you go, could I live like that? I was once in Kolkata, India. I don't know if anyone's been to Kolkata. I loved it there. It was an amazing city, amazing, bustling city. It made New York City look like a little skip in the park. It was that full on. And Mother Teresa lived there. And her tomb is there. And so I went to visit where she lived and the room and her tomb. And it's a very nice place. And I went to her room. And as a nun, it really impressed me because she was a nun, different lineage, different religion. But her room was so simple. And she did the books, I guess, for the nunnery or something, and you saw the ledger of the books, the accounting, and it was such a simple, small room, and it was really good for me because I thought, could I live like this? A simple room that, you know. So some people live like that, and they don't need a lot of other things. Most people don't live like that. So renunciation is not about giving away all your money, letting go of your house, and it's not about that. It's an attitude that you are giving up delusion and distraction. You are giving up behavior that doesn't suit you or benefit you or others. How do we give it up? Slowly, through the practice and process. Okay, renunciation. What I feel like, though, is renunciation, true renunciation is when you begin to have compassion for yourself. Begin to have compassion for yourself. An example is, years ago I was in a relationship when I lived in San Francisco, and we didn't do it very well, the relationship. So fortunately, each relationship I had, I felt like I got a little better. I learned the lesson in that one, the mistakes I made, and then I did a little better the next time. And the next time a little bit better, until my last relationship before I got ordained. And then we got ordained in the same ceremony, me and my boyfriend, right? I used to say to him, you know, best way to break up, get ordained, right? So he's a lovely guy. He lasted about 2.5 years as a monk, and we're still very good friends. And so I got a little bit better, but I was in this one very dysfunctional relationship some years before. And then, you know, you have a drama in the relationship. Something happens, you have a fight, okay, it's normal. You have a fight, and we had a really big fight, and somehow it's something like switched in me. And literally, he walked out, I fell to my knees sobbing, like it was real drama, you know. And when I was on my knees, I had this thought in my head, I'm not doing this again. I will not do this. I will not do it this way again. I'm not going there anymore. I can't. It's too much suffering. Too much suffering for me. Okay? So suddenly there was this trip of, I'm giving this up. I'm giving this behavior up. It's poison. It's poison. And I did, and I never went back like that, having a relationship like that. So I felt like that was, fortunately, compassion for myself. You know, I said, you're suffering so much, Amy. How long do you want to do this? Every time you get into this like this, why do you want to keep doing this? So addicts do it. People addicted to substances, substance abusers, they call them in my country. Mostly drugs and alcohol, let's say. Okay. So there's people that fortunately bottom out, we would say, in addiction terminology. You bottom out, you reach your bottom, okay? And often I've had some friends that are recovering addicts said like, enough, I'm not doing this anymore. And then they get into a rehab program, get healthy, get clean, get sober, and some of them remain that way through a variety of practices. So if you have some sort of addiction, the things I found to work the best, and it doesn't have to just be substances, it could be food, sugar, caffeine, online shopping, you know, physical exercise. Okay, I know a woman addicted to physical exercise, charting as little as she could eat or drink when she exercised. Over time, like it's not a balanced state. So if you find this is one of your things, sometimes do they have these in this country, 12-step programs in Europe? Okay, very famous in the States, 12-step programs. Often has God, the concept of God involved in that. But there's Buddhist 12-step programs where they slightly change that step. You know, devoting yourself to a higher power or whatever. You can convert it into your own passage with your mind. But that has been helpful for people. I found, in conjunction with meditation practice, and in conjunction with having a very good sponsor, somebody's support system that helps you, whether it's a support group, or I know people that have gone into formal therapy. I found those three things tend to really get people out of the addiction. If you're really struggling with something, on another level, we all have a level of addictions, right? On some level that we manage to some degree. That's okay. But if you really feel like, I'm really struggling with this, I would recommend these other things. I found it works. 12-step programs on their own, I found not as effective. Not always as effective. Okay, therapy on its own, I found not that effective without the other components. It's up to you. You can try. You probably all have your own experience as well. So I find that, fortunately, if they bottom out and hit bottom before they die, because some substance abusers die first, but for us also, we reach our bottom and you say, I can't do this anymore. Could be a pattern in your family. And we all have patterns in our family, maybe not so healthy. And somebody treats you in a certain way that's abusive, disrespectful, goes on and on. And for a while you take it and the family holds you in that role. And some days you go, you know what? No, this isn't good enough. Okay? So it's some compassion for yourself. And that's where the whole exercise of compassion starts. Self-compassion, okay? Self-compassion is not, overindulging myself. It's not a kind of weakness. It's not giving in to unhealthy patterns, you know? It's having a balanced perspective and equanimity towards myself. I'm a decent human being. I'm trying, okay? It's not self-gratification. I worked really hard today, I'm going to have the whole pint of ice cream. It's not about that. It's not necessarily about that treat program. But it is having some ice cream within balance, like that. Sometimes going out for the pizza, and I deserve it, and I'm okay, and I'm going to eat it in a balanced way, by touching reality. Okay. So with self-compassion, we have to start finding the triggers that keep us from that, and exploring what really is healthy for us, what really helps us undo some negative patterns and things like that. And renunciation, to have true renunciation, they say on the Buddhist path, is where you enter the first stage of the path of accumulation. There's five paths to enlightenment, okay? Path of accumulation, you're accumulating the conditions you need to see emptiness directly. Path of accumulation. Number two, there's a path of preparation. You're preparing to see emptiness directly. Path number three, the path of seeing. You see emptiness directly. Path number four, the path of habituation or meditation. Okay, I'm meditating a lot to familiarize my mind with what I saw directly. Path number five, the path of no more learning, where you're removing the subtle vestiges to enlightenment before you become a Buddha. So the first path, the path of accumulation, is you get onto that path when you have full, basically a realization of renunciation. And what that means is where you strive day and night to get enlightened. You strive day and night to get out of samsara, suffering of samsara. I know I've mentioned samsara before in the teaching in London and some other teachings. You're familiar, samsara is a Sanskrit term. It means to cycle, to turn. That's right, I mentioned this last night, samsara. Was I telling you about, maybe I did this in London, when I was in the 90s, sorry, I'm trying to think, was anybody, in the 90s, a cosmetic company invented a new perfume. Some of you remember this. They called it samsara. So Buddhists found this very funny. You're going to buy it? You need to buy more of that? Right? So we didn't have television at the center. But occasionally one of us was, you know, at a friend's, and I was one night at a friend's watching, and the commercial came on. It was the latest perfumes, you know. And the commercial is, you know, a woman maybe running across the street, the wind is blowing, she's got magenta silk shawl that's blowing, and the, you know. And then you hear the voiceover, the voice comes on. Like, it's a sexy word, I guess, you know. We thought it was hysterical, the Buddhists, like, they named it samsara, really? It's very funny. Samsara, you need more of this? But it, you know, kind of, and samsara, it's like that. We're a little bit brainwashed. We think it's going to be okay in samsara. And we're trying to fix samsara. I know there's happiness there. I know it. You know, I know there's the pot at the end of the rainbow in samsara. I know if I can just, and I hear people all the time, when my kid goes off to university, you know, then I'm going to get my practice going. Then it's going to be sort of, when I get out of debt, I should be able to do that next year. Everything's going to be okay. Yeah. Once I get the car payments done, once I move to the new flat, once I get a new job, we're always sorting. It's always going to be, everything's going to be, that's samsara. It's relentless. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. Yeah, so once you finish all these things, and then suddenly you're too old and it's too late, okay? The activities are numerous in the world, never-ending activities. I have friends going around the world looking for the perfect retreat place. It doesn't exist in samsara. There's no perfect retreat place. So you find something that's as good as it gets, and you sit down, and if you need earplugs, you use earplugs. It really impressed me. There's a very dear friend, Mexican nun. She's a newly ordained, I mean a few years. And I've met her, and she's a lovely woman, the sweetest woman. And a few years ago she told me, Rinpoche told me to do 3-year retreat. She lives in Mexico. She lives in Mexico City. Okay? She did a 3-year retreat in her apartment in the middle of Mexico City. So I said to my friends, if you just want to do long retreat, you just sit down and you do it. And she did it. She said it was really hard. I think she had good result. You just get to it and you do it. Nothing's perfect in samsara. We're constantly trying to find that little piece of perfection in samsara. And one time I was getting an Indian visa in downtown San Francisco. I'd come back from India, a couple of years in India. I was waiting outside this place for it, and I had... And the teacher who ordained me, Chödön Rinpoche, his attendant was going to pick me up and we were going to go to dinner. So he called that he was a little bit late. So I'm waiting outside and I look at the building. You know, when you come back from 2 years in India and you're in the States, it's like, you know, it's like another planet, right? So I'm waiting and I think there's this shop, big shop, and I walk into this building. I used to live in San Francisco. I don't remember this building. I went into this building and I was like, oh, I wonder what's in here. And I go in this building, and it's all very beautiful inside. Okay. But I can't tell what they sell. I couldn't tell. So I go up a few steps, and there's this beautiful floor, and there's people very well dressed, you know. And there's counters, but I couldn't see any items. All kind of marble, whatever. And a man comes over to me in a suit. I'm dressed like this. And he says, can I help you? And I looked at him, but I couldn't even ask him what he could help me with because I didn't know what the shop was. Like, I was really, you know, in India sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm, you know, hello, America, you know. So all I could blurt out to him was looking around, and I looked at him, he was very nice, and I said, what is this place? Like, you know. And then he turned to me, and he said, I don't know if you know this shop, it's an American big department store, high-end department store. And he turned to me and he said, this is Bloomingdale's. Mm-hmm. It's a high-end department store. It would like be saying, this is Selfridges. Mm-hmm. You just entered Selfridges, or, you know. And then I had a context of Bloomingdale's. Oh, okay, thank you. But I'm like, what do they sell? And I went on the floor. It's cosmetics. Cosmetic floor. Everything's in the counters. Beautifully arranged. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting, and sometimes I go around, if I'm in a jewelry department, go around, I make offerings. So I'm waiting for the attendant. I was like, oh, I'll make offerings. I'm walking around. I'm just looking at things. Lotions and potions, right? You know. But one of them, I look at this. There's a little jar, something. It says $775. I was like, and the guy in the room was like, oh, can I help you? And I said, is that $700? Like, I thought, it can't be. It must be $7.75. There's no way. But we're the decimal point. And he says, yes, madam. And I said, are you kidding me? And he said, no. And I said, and jokingly, I said, what's in it, gold? And he said, yes. If I'm going to get gold, I'm not going to get it in a cream and put it on my face. I'm going to wear earrings or something. Give somebody a gift, or give my guru some gold and something. Couldn't believe it. So I'm walking around. I get to another counter. And a guy says, would you like a sample? And he pushes these two little plastic pots over to me. Would you like a sample? Body lotion, he said. And I thought, well, I travel all the time. That's handy. I said, oh. And I said, so I thought, maybe I'll just take one of them. And he said, the name of the scent, their scented body lotion is underneath. Right? I turned one over. What do you think it said? Samsara. Right? I laughed so hard. I looked at him like, Rinpoche, is this you? Do I need more of this? It's such a lesson for my mind. It was so funny for me. I was like, of course it says Samsara. Like, what am I doing in Bloomingdale's, right? So be skillful with your mind. Let's be real about our renunciation. Are there some things now in your life, practically, this is your trajectory, this is your path and your effort, that you feel like you could give up so you have more time for practice, more space in your mind, that maybe you have a gentler outlook towards your colleagues at work, towards yourself, towards your family? Okay, you have to get real with yourself. I can't tell you what to do. But you want to be reasonable. You could write some things down in the break time or during lunch tomorrow. What reasonable thing? If it's like I'm giving up chocolate for the rest of my life, come on. It's not realistic. Could I divert? This is a realistic thing that I've done myself. Could I divert? We're now at June, 17th, I think. We're in the middle of June. You say, okay, July 1st. Give yourself a few weeks. But July 1st, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take 30 minutes from some kind of wasted time activity that I do. We all have it. We all have some lazy moments show up. I'm going to take 30 minutes that month. Just going to take the whole month of July. I'm going to divert 30 minutes, something that I'm normally doing every day. Can I take that 30 minutes and switch it into something I find is more meaningful? Whatever that more meaningful is. If it's a day, maybe that's difficult. 15 minutes a day? Try it over the course of a week. Okay? You say, I don't have time to practice. Are there time wasters in your day? You have to get real with yourself. I don't know what those are. But what happens is we all have a level of something underneath it, this niggling thing. And there's times when you do this activity and you go, I don't really feel good after this. I'm wasting time. I'm being lazy. I should practice. I should read that book I was going to read. I'm down here in the drudgery. And it pulls you down, it weights you down. Okay? And it could be the meaningful thing is, I'm going to take 15 minutes or 30 minutes, and it's more realistic sometimes 15 minutes a day, because I'm going to clean out that room or I'm going to clean out the closet. I'm going to organize the kitchen. Okay? You don't do it all at once. You don't have to do it all at once. I'm working with somebody now. It's a box a week. You can do a box a week. That's reasonable. But if you go all those boxes, do a box a week. After a month, that's four boxes are done, sorted, gone, gotten rid of. Do you ever look in your closet, in your drawers and stuff? Aren't there clothes in there you haven't worn in 10 years? Okay, does it take up mental space? That's just one thing, but it would be really helpful to divert it into practice. Can I just try this now? I come out of the retreat. You may want to start it the day after the retreat because you've just had the inspiration from the retreat. So you don't have to wait till July 1st. Already got it going. Keep it going. You skip a day, then you just start the next day. And I will mention again, but please remember when you leave here Monday, be gentle when you leave here with yourself because you just had a few days in a nice, protected, safe, peaceful, tranquil setting. So if some of you are going back to a city, Be gentle with yourself. Notice how quickly you get back on your devices. What are you doing on your devices? Can you just leave it a little longer? The world somehow survived, you know, we're doing okay. It's going to be all right. Can I give my mind a little bit more space? Can I remember the motivation when I go to sleep tonight? Can I do some Vajrasattva practice? A little bit, you try. Didn't get through it that day? Can I try tomorrow? And pretend that I'm back at Land of Joy. I come in for the session. You just try your best. Okay, we're going to take a break. 15, why don't we take a 20-minute break? Have some tea, stretch your legs, and we'll be back 5:20. We'll come back to do some meditation before dinner. Thank you.